Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with your hosts, Drs. Anish Chagpar, Susan Higgins, and Stephen Gore. Dr. Chagpar is Associate Professor of Surgical Oncology and Director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital. Dr. Higgins is Professor of Therapeutic Radiology and of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences. And Dr. Gore is Director of Hematological Malignancies at Smilow and an expert on myelodysplastic syndromes. Yale Cancer Center Answers features weekly conversations about the research, diagnosis, and treatment of cancer. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can email your questions and comments to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. This week, it's a conversation about the emotional and mental impact of cancer with Dr. David Sells. Dr. Sells is Associate Research Scientist in Psychiatry at Yale School of Medicine. Here's Dr. Anish Chagpar.
Dr. Sells, you know, we talk a lot on this show about cancer, but one of the things that I think often goes missed as we're talking about the genomics and the biology and all of these advances that we're making in terms of therapies of cancer is the emotional impact that it has on cancer patients. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, it's such a profound experience and one that has a lot of social overtones as well, continued social overtones. That it has the ability to affect your sense of who you are. A lot of people end up adopting an identity of being a cancer survivor or cancer patient because, you know, the experience of diagnosis, the rigors of treatment, the experience of the illness itself are also profound. So it has a transformative experience for a lot of people, and along with that comes a transformative way of being. Sometimes good, but usually in the short term, it's something that is unfamiliar and frightening. And like that, you have corresponding, you know, emotional reactions, you might say, that are experienced as problematic. Anxiety, fear, sense of a foreshortened future, all of these things, you know, affect your way of being emotionally. And they tend to infiltrate, you know, different parts of your life significantly.
So, I mean, I think that those emotional reactions, the fear, the anxiety, would really be pretty normal, pretty much anticipated. You know, you've just gone through this diagnosis. You're wondering about, oh my gosh, am I going to recur? Will this happen again? What's going to happen to my children? Might I die? I think that's understandable. So how do patients deal with that? How do they deal with that emotional baggage?
Well, you know, a lot of people have different types of coping mechanisms in place, and that can range anywhere from, you know, sharing with the loved one who sort of gets it. You know, they sort of get who you are. They sort of get, as well as they can, not being the person who is undergoing this, what the experience is like. Some people have activities that are so profoundly engrossing for them, hobbies, and could range anywhere from car repair to painting, that it serves as a sufficient distraction. And even a mode of self-expression, depending on what they might paint about, mm-hmm. for example. So there's a channel of opportunity there. Other folks, you know, might reach out to a therapist or somebody in their spiritual community, mm-hmm. if they belong to one. So, you know, there's such a variety of it, and of course, a combination of all of these things, and none of what I said is exhaustive, of course, that, you know, person's way of coping with it is about as unique as the person herself or himself.
Yeah, because, you know, oftentimes cancer centers have some sort of facility to help people with that emotional baggage, whether it is, for example, through complementary therapy, Reiki, art therapy, massage, guided imagery, whether it is through support groups, whether it is through social work and mental health. So talk a little bit about the differences that patients have in terms of which therapies might be best for them. Because as you say, what I found in my practice is that many patients, you know, what's good for some may not be good for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's certainly a variety of ways to sort of go about getting support and guidance. And saying that, you know, you might consider for the individual what's more important to them on balance is getting more support and feeling loved and cared for and understood. The thing that makes the difference for them, or does it have something more to do with guidance, practical guidance, which is another way of expressing care and love, which is, you know, I have these bad burns from radiation, and then, you know, somebody might suggest a remedy, either a clinical one or one that's herbal or what have you. Perhaps someone has been through the experience themselves, and that's what really does it for them. They're sort of practical guidance because they receive it as a message of care. So, you know, how things are offered and how they're received makes a big difference. And again, it ends up being different for every person. That's why it's wonderful that a place like Yale Cancer Center has so many different options for support and guidance, because you have so many different souls coming in for care.
Yeah. And I guess the other way of kind of finding your way or getting emotional support, which ties into some of your research, has to do with having somebody who has gone through it themselves share their experiences. Can you talk a little bit about your findings and how that works and how some patients find that can be pretty helpful?
Sure. Absolutely. There's nothing like having been there.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who have been there also have the immediate credibility with a person going through the experience now that they surely get it, you know, in their own way. But there's somebody who knows what it's like. Some things you go through in this experience between diagnosis, illness, treatment are things that are very difficult to express to anybody. And some of the things that we touched on earlier are part of that. So somebody who's gone through that gets it. So they have that credibility, they have that understanding. And if they have a sort of, I guess you could say, clinical flair of sorts, they can be there for that person in a way that others can't.
Mm-hmm.
They can engage them if the person is reticent to talk or express some of the experiences that they've had and kind of keeping it in the baggage, so to speak. This provides an opportunity to unpack opportunity for expression, which is always, or generally a good thing for most people. I found it to be, in my research has just been absolutely critical for people that they've had that sort of outlet with somebody who really knows what it's like.
So I think for many patients, it's nice to have somebody who has gone through it, because then you can, they can relate. But even in that experience, even though they, quote, get it, sometimes that experience is individual to every single patient. So the emotional support, the family support, the social support that I may have, my particular biology, my particular cancer, my particular treatments may be very different from yours. And therefore, while we share a common diagnosis, and yes, some of the things, the anxiety, the fears may be similar, they may be different as well. Have you found that can sometimes temper this peer mentorship that you found?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a peer is in the eye of the beholder, mm-hmm. To a large extent. And the fact that we've both had, you know, a similar experience doesn't necessarily mean that we'll see, you know, eye to eye, or that that'll, you know, create a bridge of sorts for me to express, you know, unexpressible things. So it doesn't always work. And when it does, it's on a continuum. Mm-hmm. For some folks, it makes a lot of difference. And for some, not so much. So the point's, you know, very well taken, that there's a range.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other way where this plays in is, you know, so often when patients are given a variety of treatment options, they'll say, oh, well, my fill in the blank here, my cousin, my best friend, my brother-in-law's sister had X. They chose treatment X. But the question really for me is to bring the patient back to, that may be right for them. Have you really thought about and internalized whether that's right for you? And so how does that dynamic of, you know, trying to take and appreciate the experience of a peer translate into a person thinking about their own experience and how they might use that to their benefit?
Yeah, I mean, we all sort of pick and choose the types of things that we take from others in terms of their, you know, well-intentioned advice, mm-hmm. and empathic gestures. And some of those things are powerful, and some of them they might not be so much. And that's you know that's a hallmark of peer services. What ends up being critical is a sense of match, mm-hmm. not just along the lines of, you know, we both had this experience, but we relate to each other. And that's something that I've found seems to happen fairly immediately. And just like in, you know, psychotherapy, so I've been trained as a psychologist, what really heals is the relationship. And that common experience provides one possibility for engaging in, you know, a therapeutic type of relationship. You know, like, point well taken, it doesn't always work, and other people are going to look for other avenues to sort of regain their sense of vitality and purpose if it's been disrupted by this experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I want to harken back to something that you mentioned a little bit in passing, which is with regards to the stigma of cancer and how it's this transformative experience that makes patients now label themselves, feel themselves to be a, quote, cancer patient, which can be either really good. I mean, we've all seen cancer survivors celebrating the fact that they are a survivor and they are going to shout it at the top of the mountaintops and cheer everybody else on and raise awareness, and it's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And others who are, in a sense, burdened by that realization. We're just at the halfway point of the show, and we sadly have to take a short break for a medical minute. But when we return, what I'd really like to do is to get your sense of how this stigma affects cancer patients, and how they internalize it or not, and how they can deal with that. We'll be right back after we take this short break for a medical minute.
There are over 13 million cancer survivors in the United States and over 100,000 here in Connecticut. Completing treatment is an exciting milestone, but cancer and its treatment can be a life-changing experience. Following treatment, cancer survivors can face several long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, and an increased risk of second cancers. Resources for cancer survivors are available at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers to help keep cancer survivors focused on healthy living. The Survivorship Clinic at Yale Cancer Center focuses on providing guidance and direction to empower survivors to maximize their health, quality of life, and longevity. This has been a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center and Smilo Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined tonight by my guest, Dr. David Sells. We're talking about the psychiatry of cancer. And right before the break, we started to really unwrap this whole idea of stigma. Now, I will tell you a little story here, and this is a true story. My mother was recently diagnosed with breast cancer, and she went through treatment, and she started to tell everybody about breast cancer and the fact that they should get a mammogram, and because she got a mammogram, they found this really early, and she wanted to make sure that other people could learn from her experience. And one of the things that she told me that for her was quite curious was the fact that as she would do this, people would come up to her and say, well, actually, I too was diagnosed, but I didn't tell anyone. And my mom was really quite surprised by this because she said, I don't get why you would keep that a secret. What is the stigma behind cancer? It's not like you did anything to cause this. It's not like it's something, quote, bad. But yet, Dr. Sells, it's something that for a lot of patients, it is something that they are perhaps somewhat ashamed of. Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah, I think that it's something that perhaps was a little more common, back 30, 40, 50 years ago, the stigma attached with it because it was, you know, understood to be terminal, frightening, all that stuff. So people tend to sort of shy away from talking about frightening things. They don't know how to give support in that type of situation. And the people who have it, who've been diagnosed with cancer, don't want to be a burden to others. So it becomes something that becomes, you know, through sometimes overt cues and sometimes quite subtle, but also equally powerful cues, hidden. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even with some, you know, degree of shame. From that point, you get into the notion of psychological recovery, mm-hmm. from the experience, from the social overtones of the illness, which have to do with redefining yourself as a person who has this but isn't this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's critical. I would suggest that psychological recovery from it has to do with, recognition or re-recognition or reminder somehow that you are other things.
Yeah.
And perhaps primarily other things.
Right.
In addition, you have this, illness. And from that point forward, it becomes less difficult, perhaps, to share.
Yeah, I think that is so right on the mark. My mom bounced back, had her surgery. We were out shopping the next day, and people were like, "Oh my goodness!" And she was like, "What? It was a bump in the road. So I had cancer. I had my surgery. I'm done now." She is a remarkable, remarkable individual. And I think that for her, this was just a thing, just like any other thing. Mm-hmm. An ailment like, a cold. Okay, cancer is much worse than a cold. But like many of the medical conditions that we deal with, that doesn't define us. And so I think that was really important. I guess the other thing too, that ties into this feeling of shame is for some cancers, there may be more baggage associated with it because of its etiology. So, for example, in patients who have lung cancer who smoked for 40 years, do you find that they have more guilt because they feel like they caused this? Or people who have HIV-associated malignancies that they feel that somehow this was a shameful thing? How do we get beyond that? How do we get to empowering patients to say, yes, I had cancer, I am a survivor, but I am much more than that?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a matter of encouraging and reconnecting them with their other ways of defining themselves. That could be, you know, their jobs, their families, you know, defined as a father or a mother, their professions sometimes are a big deal. A lot of people will, double up in their professional life if they're feeling up to it. Mm-hmm. To sort of reinforce that kind of identity. There's always a question of meaning. Where did this come from? Why has this happened to me? And sometimes if they suspect it was, a past behavior, sure, there might be some guilt and shame, tied to the experience as well. Not that they ever know definitively, but we all want to know so badly that, that's one of the directions it can go in when this sort of storm erupts around them.
And it must be difficult to kind of get into the headspace of whatever was in the past that led up to this was in the past and led up to this. I'm here now. Mm. I'm dealing with this cancer now. But I am going to move forward in the future in a productive way, regardless of the past. And I think that perhaps getting to that headspace in the whirlwind of cancer therapy and diagnosis and all of the psychology that goes into, but what caused this and why me, might be difficult.
You're saying that it would be difficult to
get to that point
absolutely.
I'm going to put this behind me, because absolutely. I think that's essentially where you need to get to. Is it doesn't matter what caused it.
Yeah, no.
We're here now.
That's such an important point. It's nothing short of an epic journey through, the storm of diagnosis and treatments and the illness itself, of course, and communicating it to loved ones. And it's an epic quest. As I call it before it, I had this idea in my mind after doing a number of interviews with people that it wasn't unlike, a mythical quest that Psyche, who was a mortal in Greek mythology, she was looking for her love, her Eros. Eros was a god who had fallen in love with her, but they had a falling out, had to do with a number of things. But she went on this quest to regain her Eros. Everybody goes on this quest differently. And, of course, upon this quest, she was faced with, what felt like insurmountable types of challenges and tasks all quite harrowing. Unlike a lot of Greek myths, it has a happy ending because she did regain her Eros. I use that, in part, I guess, to remind myself, lest I forget, what a profound challenge it is to regain one's sense of self and vitality for a lot of people after these experiences.
Mm-hmm. And the story kind of made me think about another element of this whole situation, which is that as we are individuals in relationships, in families, in communities, in societies, how do those relationships also vary? Either with just the knowledge of the diagnosis or with the ramifications of the treatments. So, you know, for women who undergo mastectomies, for example, one of the questions always is, how does this affect your body image, your sense of femininity, your sense of sexuality, this whole concept of, you know, will my husband, lover, whatever, still care for me? How much does that play in to the whole psychology of cancer and this sense of I am more than my cancer?
No, I mean, our bodies are perhaps our greatest personal possession. And, if they're changed in a manner that's, visible or otherwise, that demands a psychological adjustment, usually, a stage of grief. Mm-hmm. And, everybody, again, given all our differences, personally, can go through that differently. Some people, bounce back very quickly. I imagine perhaps your mom went through, a stage of grief, but maybe it was very short, or maybe, she was able to, she's built differently.
I do think it is so individual. Has been my experience. My mom is remarkable. So Mom, if you're listening to the show, you are, I've said it to the world, just an incredible, remarkable woman. And she just bounced back. She really did take it like a bump in the road. But so many patients, even if there isn't, a physical insult, even just the mental cognition of I am now a cancer survivor changes in some way those relationships. And I find that it often is patients who have very strong support, who have families who say, you know what, we're here for you no matter what. We love you no matter what. That's one situation. But there are situations where people end up, as they go through this cancer diagnosis, having relationships fall apart. And, and so I think it all speaks to both how cancer has an impact on that individual's psyche and their relationships. But also I find that it is a truth-telling of the relationship itself as to how it is enduring or not.
A litmus test of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people find that, their social networks shift and rearrange after something like this, which is, profound, but it's all part of that, storm. Some people come through as angels that you wouldn't have expected, whereas others that you sort of expected to sort of stand right by you sort of haven't quite lived up to that expectation. And of course, it changes the relationship. And since, to a large extent, we also understand ourselves in reference to our relationships, it changes our identity in those ways as well, meaning I'm close to this person and not that person anymore. And it feels like a different world.
Yeah. And I think, one of the things just as we're wrapping up that I'd like you to speak to fairly quickly is that I've also found that patients sometimes celebrate and they transform into people who can actually do things that they never thought they'd do because of this experience. Have you found the same?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's, that's on the positive end of the transformative, type of experience of it. They end up feeling more connected with others, more invested in a particular type of activity. Mm. I mean, I'll just say my father has become an award-winning artist since his diagnosis in 2005. Speaking of parents,
yeah,
you know, that's a new type of identity.
Dr. David Sells is associate research scientist in psychiatry at Yale School of Medicine. We invite you to share your questions and comments. You can send them to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. And as an additional resource, archived programs are available in both audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. We'd like to thank the Yale Cancer Center for providing production support for this program, and we'd also like to thank Renee Gaudet, Emily Fenton, and the staff of the Yale Broadcast and Media Center. I'm Bruce Barber, hoping you'll join us again next Sunday evening at 6 for another edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers, here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.